The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. If you're concerned about your health in any way, we encourage you to consult your GP.
People don't like talking about it, but incontinence can affect anyone. You may have a friend or relative who lives with it every day, or maybe you're worried about your own incontinence. Incontinence Talks is here to make us all feel more confident about continence, hosted by former Olympian rower and Coloplast ambassador Pete Reed. Today, Pete talks to Samantha Cole about his own incontinence experience, the impact of UTIs, and how their relationships help them through.
On the subject of confidence, you just told me that some of your friends and closest friends don't know, and they suspect, but you don't feel, or you haven't felt so far, like you've been able to talk to them about it. But we're on a podcast, and this isn't just for me and you, it's for everybody. So why now? And what makes you feel so confident to do this? Presumably you will message your friends and say, can you give this a listen, please?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I don't know if I know the answer myself. I'm not embarrassed about it. I'm not ashamed of it. And why should I be? I don't need to carry those thoughts from childhood into now because it didn't serve me. I don't want anyone to feel the same way that I did. And if I can do something to help other people not feel that horrific sense of shame or isolation, I'll do it.
So that's amazing and selfless. It's a little bit different to my experience because I'm putting myself in a position of a young lady going through this in the 90s. And then as well, how lucky I feel to have gone through it, age 38. I think wrongly as a man, it does make a difference, but a 38-year-old in 2019, 2020, 2021, the technology is very different. The internet's here. People talk about all sorts of things now, not incontinence, but I don't think. So before we had this opportunity to speak with each other on this podcast with Coloplast, I couldn't find anything out there about incontinence, whether that's bladders or bowels, so wee or poo. There's just nothing out there because it's not being said. But this is an opportunity to talk about it, and we'll continue to do so. I feel like it's been a lot easier for me than it was for you. And part of that as well is because I'm a wheelchair user, so people can see that there's something wrong. And it's made it much easier for me to feel very open with talking about some of these things in the background. One, because it's new. Two, because I think because I had an injury with a small public profile. Some people, especially rowers, knew who I was. And enough of a profile for people to run a few stories and press things. And I became the spinal stroke guy. Spinal strokes, that was the injury that I had, but they're very, very rare. You'll know better than I do, but apparently 1% of all strokes are in your spinal cord rather than your brain. So suddenly when spinal strokes as a spinal cord injury was in the press, lots of people were reaching out to me, and I felt like I had a bit of a platform to talk about this stuff, and I felt comfortable doing it, but also a little bit of a sense of duty. So if I'm prepared to talk about these things, then hopefully it will make it easier for people who are suffering in silence a little bit. And I feel like that might have been the Samantha in 1990. There'll still be a Samantha in 2025 benefiting from this conversation we're having and the stories that you're sharing. And I think that's really selfless.
I wondered, you know, I shared some of the experiences when I wet myself in public and it was very embarrassing for me. Are there any times in your past where you've sort of had a wet patch or had an embarrassing moment that you found difficult to deal with?
Yeah, so there definitely are. Very soon after injury, I came out to meet my mate Tom, and we went to a pub together in London. We were just in a ye olde, just by Trafalgar Square. I forget the name, but it's on the northeast side, and there are a step or two to get in, and I was feeling full of bravado. And he helped me into this pub. Like, we just did a bit of a lift. And this was in a safe time to do it, obviously, because the pubs were open, but it was around the COVID time of things being open or not. So it was very quiet in London. And I remember we had a pint together, and I was new to a wheelchair. It was lovely to see him. And because it's lovely to have a pint with your mates, we had a second pint. And because it's lovely to have a second pint, wrongly, I wasn't thinking about this stuff, but I didn't need to go to the loo. I couldn't feel it. So we had a third pint, and just like halfway down the third pint, I remember the nurses that had been saying, okay, you can't feel it, so think about your intake. And by 2.5 pints, you've sort of forgotten about all this stuff anyway, just having a nice time with your buddy. And then I looked at this and thought, I probably need to go for a wee, not least because he had already gone and come back. So I went to the bar and said, hi, do you have an accessible loo that I can use? And he looked at me just like shocked. Sorry, mate, it's the toilet's down those concrete steps, down this narrow passageway like London pubs are. So I explained to Tom, he knew that I needed to catheterise anyway, but I said, we've got to find an accessible loo. So we dropped out of this, dangerously out of this two-step pub, and then it was a case of where can... I didn't have a database. I needed to find a place to go and have a pit stop. And hotels know that we went up and down the street a little bit, and it was a long roll through town. Anyone that knows London, we got as far as St. James's Park, which is a long roll away. And by that point, I'd started leaking. And he doesn't know this even, but I didn't tell him, but I had a wet patch, and it was starting to leak out. We did get there not in time because I'd been leaking, and I was trying to hide it with my coat a bit and my jumper. And then I did get to use the accessible loo. I did get to self-catheterize 4 or 5 minutes too late. And I remember the volume that was coming out of me was scary. I mean, at the time I was using a product with a bag on it, and I needed to use a second bag, and it filled up to, it was well over a liter. I didn't tell the nurses that, but not good. And I just felt a bit ashamed, really. It's not just the wet patch, but as well, I know that I would be sitting in the wheelchair cushion would have had wee in it, and I can't just get up to change. I can't stand up, and I didn't have clean clothes. I guess, yeah, I think I just felt dirty and embarrassed. Yeah, that was the first time that it was a tough day.
How soon after injury was that?
Only a few months.
Okay.
And I can't remember exactly when, but the earliest time I felt a bladder problem was I was still in primary care at Derriford Hospital, really trying to understand what was going on with my body, like just a information overload from medical professionals of different areas. And I'd started a physio process to try and get some stimulation on my muscles. And I remember being on the physio bed with... And the physio, she was with me. I remember violently shaking, like spasming. So I didn't know what that was, but my legs were shaking, moving up and down. It was like completely out of control. She was a little bit worried because I couldn't lie down flat. And I had a sensation, not like a healthy person sensation, but I remember thinking, I've just been for a pee. It can't be that. I've just catheterized. She went to get me a catheter, and I couldn't get into my wheelchair because I was shaking so much. So I was catheterizing, shaking, and it was the first time I had a UTI, which I didn't know, a urinary tract infection. So I had a bladder infection going on that was brewing. That's why I didn't know what it felt like. And I remember the bag of this catheter filling up with what looked like horrible, sedimenty, orangey brown urine that I hadn't ever seen before. And it was quite scary because this was all very new. Scary anyway. And it must have been so painful, but I couldn't feel pain. It must have been so painful that I was peeing and then spasmed off the side of the bed that I was on onto the hospital floor with a big old crunch. And in that process, the catheter came out. So for male catheters are quite long because they've got a bit further to travel. And the catheter came out. I landed on the bag split, and there was all this rank pee all over the floor. And then the blue curtains that were there for privacy, they were opened up, and there must have been, I won't let the truth get in the way of a good story, but, but like 6 or 7 people in the room. So the 2 physios and a nurse and a sister and everybody was in there trying to lift a 100-kilo lump that was spasming out of a pool of pee back onto the bed. It's the first time I felt just disgusting, quite frankly. I felt rank and embarrassed. And scared, and I didn't know what was going on. I know that's a learning process, but I think it's important. Like, so many people have been going through these things in the background, and it's unsaid. Yeah. It was a really horrible time.
Sounds really difficult, and so early on as well. Did you feel like a sense of loss of dignity?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so a loss of dignity, shame, I suppose. I didn't need to. I was in a hospital. It's nothing they hadn't seen before, but it's something I hadn't experienced before. And up until that point, maybe 3 weeks before, not only had I been able-bodied, but very able-bodied. This was a new world to me. Yeah, there was a huge loss of dignity. And I think that's just in my own head. That's on me. And I don't blame people for feeling like that, but I hope that our conversations can make them reassure people that they don't need to lose their dignity over these things, that it's that there's a learning process, and especially the very professional healthcare professionals that they're working with, they've seen it before and they're there to help. And without going on too much, there's one other one that happened more recently. So a problem I have with urology being a bit wonky and broken, and catheterization and UTIs, that space, and why it's tippy top of my A list of things I'd like to have back, is because I know there's always a threat of this creeping in. And when I'm feeling robust and healthy, like I am today, actually I feel normal. I'm just sitting in a wheelchair, but getting on with my day. I think that I'll never be unhealthy again sitting here, which is absurd, because the worst part of this is that you might have to cancel at no notice. And I pride myself on being reliable. I know I've got an idea of the extent to which you've had to prepare to be here to chat to me today. It's extensive, and it's pure chance that you didn't get a UTI and have to call this morning and say, I'm really sorry, I can't come down. I can't be there. And my one recently was, I'm name dropping a little bit, so sorry about that. And it happens quite a lot, but I do get invited to some really nice places, and I always hope that I can go, and I always arrange. This one, because I'm an honorary captain in the Royal Navy, it was the annual dinner for the honorary officers. There are 35 of us, and they're an amazing group of people. The occasion was being hosted by the First Sea Lord and the Admiralty to have a briefing about geopolitics and to have a discussion about what we've seen and the advice that we can give to the Admiralty in our areas. It was on the Isle of Wight. I don't think I'm breaching anything at the moment, but in a really splendid place. It would have been amazing. I'd already done 3/4 of the leg to be there, to travel, to rest overnight. And in the morning, I started spasming and voiding. And I had to call First Sea Lord and the group and say, I'm sorry, I can't come. And that's horrible. I felt like I was missing out, but I also felt dirty again. And the practicalities of that are, I got 3 towels, folded them up, put them on my car seat, and sat on the car seat, voiding and dribbling, with a jumper shoved down my trousers for an hour and a half drive back to Devon, with my uniform still cleaned and pressed in the back, not going and saying, I'm sorry. And it's just tough. I hate it. And I think I'll hate that for the rest of my life, just having to say no at no notice. Pure chance that we can be here today without calling and saying, I'm really sorry. And it doesn't matter who it is. It could be the King, could be the First Sea Lord, could be the team from Coloplast, could be family, loved one. It's really, I hate that aspect of it.
And I think it's something that's so unrecognised. You know, UTIs, urinary tract infections, are such a big thing for people with a neurogenic bladder. And I think because they're different to a regular UTI, it has such an impact, like you've just described. Well, it can do. People don't realise that. And hopefully sharing your story there will help people realise it. And yeah, UTIs have been a big thing for me as well. And I know what you mean about, you know, I've not had that experience as you just shared, but feeling dirty when you've got one, they've got that certain scent, you know, the urine smells really
awful. It smells like
awful.
A farm. Like
it just smells so terrible.
Farm.
But yeah, I'm sorry to hear that story.
It's an aspect that's rubbish, but important to share. And we're talking about lifestyle here, so loads of things. Like socially, I feel really guilty if friends of friends are meeting somewhere, but I know that I can't go because there's an inaccessible toilet. So then the choices are, do I not tell them and not go? Or do I tell them they might feel bad and everyone has to rearrange everything to accommodate me? It's a small little social thing, but if we're talking about life and lifestyle, these things matter. It's tough. Something that we haven't touched on yet, I wonder if you feel this as well. I call it range anxiety, right? So it's to do with having enough product, having a supply. And I think at the moment, it's platinum standard for me now. I almost take it for granted that I have enough product, and I really shouldn't, because it's the alternative is very scary. But the range anxiety is for those people that don't catheterize, who wake up, walk to the loo, have a pee wherever they want, or behind a tree, or whatever the situation calls for. I think we can't pee without catheterizing. So I need to make sure that if I'm, say, for example, coming to London to meet you and have a podcast, I've got enough product with me to, and actually product and a half, maybe two times the amount, just in case. Because if you don't have it, it's a hospital trip and you're having an indwelling catheter and a medical procedure. I used to get really scared that there are six boxes at home, and then there are five, then there are four. And I'm thinking, if this gets down to one box, I'm going to hospital if I run out of catheters, because that's just serious. Your bladder fills up, pee goes back up to your kidneys. And for me, that causes a condition called autonomic dysreflexia, which we won't go into too much. But if you're listening, can be bothered to look it up. It's a really scary, potentially fatal condition that happens to some people with spinal cord injuries. So that's terrifying. So the range anxiety is, how do you get this product and make sure that you've got enough just to live, just to be at home, just for the basics? And that doesn't even go into the anxiety, I suppose, of if you're going to travel overseas.
I knew exactly what you were talking about, even though I've not heard that term before. So I was sitting here with a big smile on my face, because yes, I've got quite a lot of catheters in my bag just for an overnight stay, because we don't want to run out. And you might lose some, or there's just this worry that you're going to be without a way to empty your bladder, and then you're going to end up in A&E. And it's happened to me before. Back in the day when I had that one catheter every 3 months, that broke, because obviously it's a rubber thing and it just perished. So I had to go to A&E because my doctors wouldn't give me one. And I was waiting in A&E for ages and ages with the bladder getting more and more distended. Maybe it's not the best story for this podcast, but they inserted a male catheter, but just once, not like a long-term catheter. And my bladder had so much urine in it, but they wouldn't give me one to take home, and I didn't have any. So luckily nowadays, things are very, very different, and I have more than enough product. And traveling overseas, I have one of those cabin suitcases that's just got catheters, stoma bags, all the other additional supportive products.
The one that you take with you onto the plane in the overhead locker.
Yes.
So you know when you arrive.
You've got it.
I do the same.
Yeah, I would never put it in the main hold.
But let's just talk about numbers here. Let's say you pee five times a day. You can't pack five per day, because it needs to be more like seven or eight, or maybe even 10. There's an old Royal Marine saying, two is one and one is none. So always pack double. So 10 per day, and the male ones are slightly bigger than female because there's a bit more pipe. So this is taking up a lot of luggage space. There's no such thing as traveling light anymore. It's a lot to carry. If you're traveling, have you ever been stopped going through security if it's hand luggage because there's liquid in there?
Not because there's liquid in there, but I have been stopped just for them to have a little look in my bag, and it's never been an issue, luckily. For anyone who's listening who's not travelled with their catheters before, or potentially stoma products as well, you do get a free cabin bag allowance if you're on one of those airlines that don't give you a cabin bag. With your medical products, your essential medical products. So I just thought that was important to
It
share.
Is. I didn't know that. So
did
thank you.
Did you not know
no,
that?
No,
yeah.
I didn't. So thank you. The reason why I said range anxiety, I've stolen that phrase from people who have electric cars who don't who get genuine anxiety that they can't get to where they're going. And I found that same thing with a range of how far can I go into the next week or days because I'm running out of product here before I have to go into hospital. And that was before, is when I was in the Navy and the sick bay were ordering direct from the supplier. And then I became aware of Coloplast Charter, which is an online ordering service to select the devices and equipment that you need to healthily use the loo. I use Peristeen for bowel care and I use Luja for emptying my bladder. And Coloplast then send off a request to your GP for a prescription, and then all of the complex stuff is done in the background, and you can receive a parcel, a beautiful parcel, like a rescue package the next day, or certainly within a couple of days, which is so reassuring. Maybe wrongly I take this for granted now, because this is the platinum standard around the world, but it's so important just because I feel like one step closer to my able-bodied peers that I can go for a pee, and I'll always need to. And I'm grateful to Coloplast in the extreme for providing that service, because it takes one bit of worry away from me. Looking ahead 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, if I get lucky, I hope that's still available and still there, because it's a little bit political as well. Like, we've got the best service and we need it as well, so that we can be here and contribute and have jobs and pay taxes. Do you use Charter, Coloplast Charter? Do you use that service?
I do, yes. Yeah.
Can you relate to the range anxiety thing?
Oh, definitely. It's great to be able to just order your items and then they arrive within a day or two. It's reassuring, and it's another thing off your worry list. You can also order your products over the phone if that's the way you prefer, or by email. So I think that's nice to have the option.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We'll finish up our conversation with some really positive things. Do you feel like your continence issues are under control now, or more under control?
I'm very happy. I'm so much happier than I was, certainly. And I would say they're 95%+ better than they were.
That's enormous.
Which is incredible, especially going by what I said about how it does affect my self-esteem. I don't remember how I used to go to the toilet, you know, before. This is just my norm now. And like I said about the innovations coming along year by year, things are just better, better and better. And I self-catheterize 5-6 times a day and I don't really think about it. I'm very, very rarely wet. I don't, you know, leak due to Botox and catheterization. It's not high up there on my radar at all. And if it wasn't for these products, if it wasn't for the peer support that I've been able to get, if it wasn't for being an ambassador where I get to talk to people who self-catheterize, because it's quite hidden still. People don't really come out about it yet. And being able to access the products I need in a timely fashion that reduce my risk of UTIs. I mean, it couldn't be better at the moment. I couldn't really think of anything better at the moment. And I do. I use Luja Female. I use SpeediCath with a bag attached. I'm having an operation next week where I'm having an indwelling catheter for a day while my arm is in numb. And I'm not that worried about it. I've got a solution and I've got what I need.
That's such an important message, because you've been doing this for a long time now. I've been doing it for a fair while, and it's normal jogging for me now as well. It's normal routine. I barely think about it. It's a hygienic, as swift as it can be, process that doesn't affect my day-to-day with my wife and little baby son. And that's the important thing in life, is just having as much of an easy, normal routine as possible.
So I suppose talking about things like relationships, partners, etc., it can really have a different impact depending on what age you are when you develop certain issues and whether you're already in a relationship or not. And I think for both of us, it's been different. For example, if you're younger when you develop continence issues, pre-puberty, during puberty, or just after puberty, that adds a whole extra layer to things when you're starting to get interested in having a partner, having a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. For me personally, I definitely felt unattractive. So I felt no one would want to go out with me. So I didn't even bother putting the feelers out there. And I imagine that some of our listeners would relate to that.
I certainly can. And I imagine they can as well. You know, when we were talking about dignity earlier, that definitely bleeds over into your relationships. And I remember very early on when I was injured, I had an indwelling catheter. So I didn't self-catheterize. It wasn't intermittent, where I do the process myself and five times a day. It was actually rather large yellow rubber tube that was indwelling while I was horizontal in a hospital bed. And I remember Jeannie, she was my girlfriend at the time, she's now my wife, but I remember feeling helpless and vulnerable in front of her. So I was naked, but with a sheet over me in a hospital bed with this pipe coming out, and a big bag of urine filling up. No valves on it. It's called a flip flow, but nothing. It was just so running out into this bag, and bless Jeannie, crouching down next to it, emptying it into one of those, I guess, like a little portable urinal thing that she can empty it into the toilet. So she was doing the bag on the side of the bed, and I felt very, very vulnerable. And she's my girlfriend and my lover and all those intimate things, and now suddenly she's handling my pee. And I think before then, we were adults. We both knew that we use the toilet and we pee and poo, but it's not like we're in the room at the time. You have your private time, even with your intimate partners, and that was a massive change. And it's the first time I'd been vulnerable around Jeannie, and it was hard. Yeah, really hard. And I think going through the process of learning how to self-catheterize with nurses in hospital, I think I was very lucky to have Jeannie on board with that process as she was learning, as I was learning as well. And now it's, for both of us, it's a normal process. Jeannie and I, we don't discuss it. We don't even think about it. I'll say I'm nipping to the loo, if that's even a thing for us anymore. I don't feel like I can nip anywhere. But she knows I catheterize. She's seen me do it. It's not on her radar of something important. But I think something important is that if I'm incapacitated for whatever reason, she can catheterize me. And that's a reality that can easily happen. So she can catheterize me so that I'm safe, but also so that it doesn't affect our intimate relationship as well. I think there's something it feels quite nice that when we go to sleep at night, I'm not plugged into anything. And I think that's the bonus of self-catheterizing, is I feel like I've got my body back from the medics now. It's my own, and I share it with Jeannie. And I share it with Fred as well. We have a home family time, and it's all normal. And I think we've got to be grateful for the products that we have now that enable us to do that. I think 50 years ago, if you lasted long at all, you'd have been plugged into something in hospital, felt disgusting, never have a relationship ever again, and then get an infection and die. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm talking like years ago, right? You'd be in a box somewhere, and 2025... It was very, very different to that. Yeah, I think Jeannie's on board with my process, and I don't feel disgusting. I just feel normal. It's not even an issue.
I was just thinking, you know, when you said Jeannie was emptying your catheter bag at the hospital.
Yeah.
That sounds like such a almost an intimate moment of acceptance of your situation. And I thought that was just really like an act of love. It just came across that way to me.
Thank you. So, and I think you're right as well. So she's a very, very empathetic person and very loving. She's a natural caregiver. But it was an intimate time. So I'm not trying to cheapen that moment, but my hobby and my background is in photography. And one of the things, when I was horizontal in a hospital bed, one of the things I really wanted to have was a camera, not for any vulgar social media purposes, but I sort of felt safe having a camera with me. And so I have this beautiful photograph, if that is even, it is a thing, it's a beautiful photograph of Jeannie emptying my catheter bag from my perspective. So from my pillow in a hospital bed, through the sheets, through a gap in the bed, and Jeannie just crouched down in the corner, emptying a bag of urine into a pot to take away. And that is very intimate and it's important. And I don't think I've ever shared that one. My photos are for me and for Jeannie and just a visual record of what we've been through. And it's special to go back through. But when we're talking about all the, like the, if we look at this conversation from the top down about how your life is affected by catheterization, this is all part of it. It's real life, and some parts are raw, some parts are beautiful, some parts are romantic and loving and special, and you don't want to forget. And even the parts where, you know, we would both wish this hadn't happened to us, if that was such a thing, or we could rewind time and roll the dice again. But that's not an option. So you look back sort of fondly at your experiences of what's happened, how it's happened, and even back to the past, the stories that you shared from when you were a young girl. You can't change those. It's shaped who you are today. I'm sure you wouldn't change the person you are today, and I wouldn't change the person I am today. And the difficult experiences are all part of that. And I think the hardest times from our pasts are probably the most useful for people in our futures. I want to tell you something that my mum said at the time. My late mother, she died sadly in 2023. But when I was going through this process in 2019 and 2020, I remember mum telling me that this will be really important for my and Jeannie's relationship. So she reminded me that it's the first time Jeannie would have seen me vulnerable, and that our roles in certain things will have to change, and that will be a very bonding for both of us. And yeah, she was proved right. I think it was really important for our relationship. You know, I'd never choose these things, and no, yeah, you wouldn't, and no one that goes through it would. But I wouldn't change what the outcomes, who I am, or my relationship, or relationship with friends, or direction career's gone. I wouldn't change any of that, because it's all right. It's okay. You'll be fine. And thank you so much for sharing your experiences that help those people who are going through it right now, because I think that's valuable in the extreme and shouldn't be understated or underestimated.
Thank you.
On our next episode, Pete is talking all things bladder and bowel health with Michelle Hogan-Trick and Emma Russell from Coloplast. There are lots of amazing charities that can provide focused support depending on your particular needs, as well as lots of information at coloplast.co.uk. Thank you for listening to Incontinence Talks, and remember to consult your GP if you have any worries about your own continence.